As the various communities that will form Plexus, the Salvation Army's online core, begin to emerge, there'll be a number of challenges that we'll inevitably face, one of which is that of safeguarding vulnerable members of the community. That's a challenge faced by all church communities of every denomination, and a responsibility that Christian leaders around the world take seriously. That's no less true for us simply because we're online. Some of the approaches we will take will be almost identical to church communities who gather together geographically, and some will be different. One additional challenge that we'll specifically face is that of knowing who the members of the community are beyond their online profiles. Are they who they say they are, or are they a scammer or other criminal hiding behind a fake profile? It's not a new phenomenon online. The Nigerian Prince email scam has been running for so long that it was even being joked about on TV over a decade ago. And yet still more than $700,000 was stolen using that same email in 2019, with other scams taking that total to well over $26 million in that 1 year alone. The question of how we can know who we're dealing with is a very real one. But then, even in real life, the challenge of knowing who someone else really is as old as the hills. How many times have you heard people talking about neighbours on their street, or friends talking after an argument, and they turn around and say, "Well, I guess you never really know someone until..." fill in the blank. So if we can struggle to really know who it is who's sending us messages over a computer, or even to really know people who we can see and touch, how on earth can we ever hope to know God? Welcome back to Selah, where today we'll take time to pause and to ask just that. How can we know God?
But if I stop and breathe in your presence,
seeing, we often struggle to be able to understand the true nature of things, and so throughout history we struggled to understand God. The Bible tells us of a number of occasions when people heard from God in a whirlwind, in a dream, in a still small voice, even in a burning bush and through a speaking donkey. We're told of people who saw angels or messengers of God, and we read that Ezekiel saw an appearance of the likeness of the glory of God. But as John reminds us in his prologue, no one has ever seen God himself, the fullness of God. We couldn't see God, John tells us, and consequently we struggled to understand him. And so the Word became human. Many translations then say that he made his home among us. The Message paraphrase uses a wonderful phrase saying that he moved into the neighborhood. But the actual phrase literally says, he pitched his tent. But that phrase isn't implying that he's only among us temporarily, that God will be among us for a short time and then leave. How dreadful would that be? Quite the opposite of good news. God came and then moved on and just left this world to its own devices. No, that phrase implies that God wants to be on familiar terms with us. He wants to be close. He wants a lot of interaction. Imagine for a moment that someone decided to move into the community in which you live. Now, if that person came and bought a large plot of land at the edge of the town or the estate and used that to build a huge palace with immense gardens surrounded by a high wall all around, save for a grand gateway with immense oak doors staffed by security guards, then that decision would communicate something about their desires, or in this case, lack of them, to be with the people of that community. Indeed, I could well understand if the community might even be offended, especially if they also built a moat and a drawbridge. But if, on the other hand, that same person pitched a tent in my back garden, then that tells an entirely different story. God, the incarnate Word, decided that he was going to enter our world, to move into the neighbourhood of mankind. And the description of how he does so is not that he came to a grand palace, which most surely would have seemed fitting for the High King of Heaven, but rather he chooses to pitch his tent in humanity's backyard. Anyone who's ever been on a camping holiday will know that it's an excellent way to build strong bonds of friendship, because camping engenders a closeness, and that develops because of the way that you have to share every aspect of your life while living together in such close proximity. In a tent, it's impossible to keep your snoring a secret. There's nowhere to hide if you start to feel upset, and you have to synchronize your daily routines with your camping buddies. That's why God became human. He came to pitch a tent in our human backyard so that we would have to have a lot of dealings with him, so that we would have to become in sync with him. God came to live in a tent so that we can watch him more closely. God wants to be seen and known in his Son.
John 1, 10-18 says, "The Word entered our world, a world he made, yet the world did not recognize him. Even though he came to his own people, they refused to listen and receive him. But for all who did receive and trust in him, he gave them the right to be reborn as children of God. He bestowed this birthright, not by human power or initiative, but by God's will. The Word took on flesh and became human and chose to live alongside us. We have seen him enveloped in undeniable splendor, the one true Son of the Father, evidenced in the perfect balance of grace and truth. John the Baptist testified about him and shouted, 'This is the one I've been telling you is coming. He is much greater than I am because he existed long before me.' Through this man, we will receive gifts of grace beyond our imagination. You see, Moses gave us rules to live by, but Jesus, the Anointed, offered us gifts of grace and truth. God, unseen until now, is revealed in the Word, God's only Son, straight from the Father's heart."
How closely are you and God living together? How well do you know his ways and thoughts and mind? And how much of your life are you opening up to him? If someone pitched their tent in your back garden, they would likely have to use your bathroom and eat often at your table. In Revelation, we read that Jesus is indeed knocking at the door of our lives, wanting to come in and enjoy fellowship with us.
"Now pay attention. I am standing at the door and knocking. If any of you hear my voice and open the door, then I will come in to visit you and to share a meal at your table, and you will be with me."
Have you let him in? And if so, have you given him free rein? Or have you just kept him standing in the hallway?
Awaken my soul. overflow.